Glad you're with us on a Thursday. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. You can also catch us on Sirius XM Channel 80. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here, the big guys out for a little vacation. And so we're getting set for the bubble scenario, Jr., to be going for the NBA. And we have a bubble scenario going in the MLS as well. It's off to a rough start, might be the easiest way to say it.
Yeah, what if I told you that the team coming from a place that is experiencing a spike in cases is also experiencing a spike in cases right now, that being FC Dallas?
That is exactly right. So they're all there and ready to roll in their bubble situation in Florida. And the Dallas MLS team, FC Dallas, has now had 9 players test positive for COVID-19. They went down there and there were 6. Those 6 were sent home, 3 more were tested positive, and now we're talking about 9. Basically, 1/3 of their roster has now tested positive for COVID-19.
And remember, this is coming on the heels of what we've seen already go on in the National Women's Soccer League and their restart tournament and what they've been doing in Utah, where the Orlando Pride suffered a rash of positive tests both for players and for members of the staff.
And then some of them tested negative after that, so it got really confusing.
I can say, which is a whole different set of problems that we're going to have to deal with in all of this, but that team in the beginning had so many positives, what they believed were positives at the time, that they pulled out of the tournament. So a lot of people probably looking at FC Dallas right now, and I know there's been talk of potentially pushing back the start of their first game. There hasn't been an official word on what the status is going to be here yet, but this is nearing that range we always talked about of what's your zero barrier of positives that you need to see to shut down a team entirely.
Yeah, I mean, the tipping point is kind of interesting here, right? So Stefano Fasaro, our ESPN MLS reporter, was on with Scott Van Pelt on Sports Center last night and basically addressed the level of concerns not only for FC Dallas with the positive tests, but how that may affect the entire MLS restart.
Right after the news broke of the 6 initial players that tested positive, I spoke to another player who's embedded in the bubble with a team that's already here, and he actually told me that, look, he actually said, quote, "We were already concerned coming into this bubble environment. Now 6 positive tests within the first few days here. That this just adds anxiety to an already tough situation." So clearly there are players that are concerned. Now, you walk around here and people, it seems like they feel pretty safe, but knowing that this is going on in the background has players nervous, and everybody here as well. Remember, we're all in the same bubble. It's all the players, all the coaches, the staff, media, and all the league officials. Everyone's under here. So it's concern for everybody.
And that's the thing, right? And it is, it shows you where we are in what we think we know and what we know and what we don't know still about COVID-19. Because let's just go back to March when Rudy Gobert tested positive for the Utah Jazz in that game against the Oklahoma City Thunder, and subsequently Donovan Mitchell, his teammate, also tested positive. The NBA shut it down. And as soon as the NBA shut it down, every other sports league, the NCAA basketball tournament, all the conference tournaments, everything else shut it down in conjunction.
The country.
Yes, everything came to a screeching halt. And now we're talking about one team for one MLS team as they get back to roll has 9 positive tests. And the line here is, the source added that canceling the tournament isn't something that has been discussed yet by the league. It shows you a couple of things, right? We're all trying to figure out how to manage with the virus. We think we know a little bit more about what it is and isn't, but it's still such a stark contrast to think that one player in one league tested positive and we came to a screeching halt. And now we've got 9 on one team, and it's like, well, we're trying to figure this thing out.
Well, I mean, living this thing for 3+ months now, 100 plus days, whatever it's been now, that level of familiarity will breed some semblance of comfort, right, wrong, or indifferent. So, unfortunately,
indifferent, it may be the best way to phrase it.
Well, I think it's just, you know what? Like, people have sort of accepted that this is life around them right now, and that clearly most of the country has decided that life will go on regardless of what any numbers say in all this one. So it has become for these leagues about trying to find solutions in all this. But the part that becomes troubling in this would happen in college football when we talked about not the initial test when you go back. This wasn't the initial round of tests that happened before FC Dallas left to come down for this tournament. This was once they arrived and had been there, another round of testing happens. And now you got positives, which shows you that the bubble, like, I'm sure for everyone else inside that bubble going, so we're already compromised.
Right.
We haven't even started playing games yet. Yeah. And now all of a sudden, apparently, COVID has found its way in here. How am I not going to be next? Because we heard there, everybody is in this thing. And this is what the NBA and anyone else doing a bubble scenario, the NHL, got to be paying attention to at this point is, all right, it is this easy for the devil to find its way directly into your living room.
So that's what's going on with the MLS inside a bubble. And of course, we have MLB players reporting to their facilities as we've had some spikes in cases in Colorado and Philadelphia and Tampa, and some of those places have had to shut down for additional cleaning. But I want you to listen very specifically to what Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred had to say on the Dan Patrick Show. He was asked about what was the realistic goal of playing and the number of games played at any point in time, according to Major League Baseball owners.
It's the calendar, Dan. Yeah. We're playing 60 games in 63 days right now. I don't see, given how the reality of the health situation over the past few weeks, how we were going to get going any faster than the calendar we're on right now, no matter what the state of those negotiations were. And, yet, you know, look, we did get a suboptimal result from the negotiation in some ways. You know, we didn't. The fans aren't going to get an expanded postseason, which I think would have been good with the shortened season. And, you know, look, the players left real money on the table. They left $25 million worth of playoff pools, $33 million worth of salary advances. But that's what happens when you have a negotiation that, instead of being collaborative, gets, you know, into sort of a conflict situation.
By the way, there's something else he said, and I thought that was part of that soundbite, so I apologize. He said, look, we were always going to only play 60 games. I mean, he said that. It was on. I heard it on the radio, and we were always only going to play 60 games. So the negotiation was a canard to begin with.
How are they still talking about the negotiation? Like, oh, I have been gone for a week, and all I said leading up before that was, if everyone in Major League Baseball had to do this the right way, they would never bring up those negotiations again. It would be all eyes forward on what they've got to accomplish here. How is Rob Manfred bringing that up in public right now? Like, how are you willingly going to walk back in the worst blight on what you were doing in these past couple of months, the thing that got you raked by fans, the media, everybody else in all this for the way you acted? My mind is blown that that's where the sound went. Like,
right.
You got health stuff to worry about. You got the logistics of playing baseball, and you want to rehash any part of those negotiations? And, in what world?
Yeah, and I guess you could say, look, he was asked a question and he tried to answer it.
He went places in that answer. Yes. He didn't have to go unless he wanted
to. You are 100% right. Baseball just chose to baseball. But again, as I heard that sound on the way in, I could not believe he basically said, we were never going to do anything but play 60 games. So what was all this for? What was all of this for? Why didn't you just say at baseball to begin with, hey man, the players and Tony Clark, this is what we're doing? Why did we go through this protracted, oh, we're offering this, we're offering that? You exposed yourself. You showed exactly what you were about as soon as you said in that scenario, we were always only going to play 60 games. So why did we go through all this mess to begin with? What was the actual point?
I just don't, like, I don't need that energy right now. What we clearly need to see from everybody is, how are you going to handle, as we talked about, the counterpunch when things do go wrong for you here? And for Major League Baseball, you've got elements of this that a lot of the other sports resuming play do not have, meaning that you are going to travel. You are going to expose yourself to that portion of risk in all of this. And like he just mentioned, you're going to do it in a very short amount of time. So I would imagine focusing all your energy on that and trying your best to explain it would be a lot better way to serve your time than rehashing negotiations that we all agree were poo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Poo.
Steaming piles of poo.
Poo.
And then, of course, remember, baseball ain't bubbling. So all these issues that we've got with the NBA trying to get there and hopefully not had a rash of positive tests when they arrive next week, and the issues that the MLS is dealing with 9 positive tests on one team inside a bubble, there ain't no bubble for baseball. They're just going to be all over the place, traveling everywhere. And again, we were always only going to play 60 games. So why did we go through this futile exercise, which did nothing but denigrate your sport in the eyes of every sports fan everywhere? Coming up next, one athlete gets the attention she's deserved for a long, long time, and the results are well worth it. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News.
Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Get you caught up on a little bit of what's trending. A heavyweight title fight between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder now targeted for December 19th in Las Vegas, according to top rank head Bob Arum. telling ESPN. Arum said the fight will take place at the new Allegiant Stadium. After fighting to a split draw in their first meeting December 2018, Fury dominated Wilder in February's rematch, sending him to the canvas twice en route to a seventh-round technical knockout victory.
What do you bet that Deontay Wilder wears a different costume heading into the ring this time?
Probably gonna change. Probably gonna change that one up just a bit. Meanwhile, speaking of something that needs a change, 9 FC Dallas players and 1 staff member tested positive for coronavirus since the team arrived in Orlando for the MLS's back tournament. It was not clear if the 3 players who first tested positive traveled with the team to Orlando. A source of knowledge of the situation said that various scenarios are being consulted as it relates to FC Dallas, including delaying their first game, rescheduling for July 9th against the Vancouver Whitecaps. Other scheduling modifications are also being considered. The source added that canceling the tournament isn't something being discussed by the league at this point. And the man who WNBA star Maya Moore fought for was finally released from prison. Jonathan Irons, who served 22 years of a 50-year sentence after being convicted in 1998 of burglary and assault with a weapon, walked free on Wednesday. Maya Moore, who, remember, put her WNBA career on hold in 2019 to help Irons, was among those who greeted him outside of prison. Quote, "I feel like I can live life now," said Irons in an Instagram video posted by Moore. "I'm free. I'm blessed. I just want to live my life worthy of God's help and influence." And that is what's trending. It's brought to you by Redbox. Redbox is the top entertainment when you need it most. Don't miss Impractical Jokers, the movie. 4 comedians go cross-country on a road trip with hilarious hidden camera pranks. Visit Redbox.com for all the ways to watch.
All right, Golic and Wingo here with you, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We'll talk to Emily Kaplan, our ESPN NHL reporter, in just a little bit. Our guy, Nick Nurse, Raptors head coach, will join us at the top of the next hour. Field Yates, the host of the Fantasy Football Podcast, will join us. And then we'll get a halftime speech that we desperately need for the second half of 2020 from my road dog, Herm Edwards. Arizona State Sun Devils head coach will also stop by. And Bruce Bowen, our ESPN NBA analyst, will also be a part of the process. So we got a lot of guests for you coming up in just a bit. But we had Renee Montgomery on last week, Junior, and basically talking about why she was going to sort of stop playing this year for the Atlanta Dream and devote her time and benefits to causes that she thinks are important to help stop social inequality and racial inequality across this country. And she cited her former UConn teammate Maya Moore as a big reason why. And I don't think it can go understated what Maya Moore has done. In any, by any metric, however you want to shape it, Maya Moore was one of the top 2 players in the WNBA in the peak of her prime. And she decided, before it was fashionable for everybody to do this, and sort of everything caught on, it just sort of got caught up in the movement because of the killing of George Floyd and other African-American men at the hands of police in this country. She decided to stop her career playing for the Minnesota Lynx and devote her entire time to get this one man out of prison. And lo and behold, working with that movement and that organization that she's working with, it's come to fruition. It is a remarkable testament of self-sacrifice to get to where she was to do that and to absolutely pull it off.
Yeah, well, and you said it cannot go understated. It has.
Yeah,
like
far too much.
It has gone grossly under-talked about, and I think it was Myron Metcalf who might have said this. It was I think we had the sound up here at some point. I'd like to see. Talking about exactly why this happened. Yeah, Myron Metcalf was on Freddie and Fitzsimmons last night and called exactly what this was and why it was under-talked about.
I can't even imagine being detained for a crime I didn't commit for a day. You think about 22 years. This guy's 40 years old. He went in when he was 18. And Maya Moore dedicated her life, her last two years of her life, put her career on hold to do this. And I'm going to say this. If this were a male basketball star, it'd be front page news all over America. We'd be running with it on all the radio shows, all the TV shows. It would be a bigger deal. Maya Moore, one of the greatest basketball players of all time, male or female, took 2 seasons off to fight for this man's life. And I don't know if there's an award that we can give that will acknowledge that effort. Because I remember the conversation when she decided to take a year off, because she's right here in Minnesota. There are billboards of Maya Moore all over this city. And people said, "What are you doing? You're putting your career on hold? Come on, you can't do that. You're in the prime of your career." And Maya Moore said, "No, this is more important."
you're 100% right. He's 100% right about this. I mean, they should make a movie about this. This is something that is just so unprecedented. You know, there was a movie made about Reuben Hurricane Carter and the people that did whatever they could to get the former boxer out of jail for crimes that he was unjustly held in jail for. This is that stuff in real life is what we're talking about here. And he's 100% correct. If this had been an NBA star, everyone would have been talking about this on every platform. It was the fact that she played for the WNBA and was a woman was why it didn't get enough attention.
Yeah, and so part of that's on all of us. Like, we need to 100%. Do a better job. We need to do a better job covering things like that when it comes up. Because Maya Moore is exactly why the discussion among Kyrie and others has been taking place.
Yep.
Like, when you, for the last now 2 years, talked about Maya Moore, you could not talk about Maya Moore's prowess in the WNBA. You couldn't talk about her life as a basketball player because she said, that's not happening right now. If you are going to bring up Maya Moore, you are going to be talking about Jonathan Irons. That is period. End of sentence. That's what you're going to be doing. And so for Kyrie and others who have talked about that coalition of players, is going back to basketball the best thing for us? That is, has its direct roots in this right now. When you made this the sole focus, it becomes the sole focus, and Maya Moore can say things get done. Yeah. And in this situation, a man walked free after being shown he was innocent in this situation. So that's why all of those players had those thought process, and it probably that didn't get traced back to it enough, was because you can look directly at Maya Moore and say she took this and created an environment where if you are talking to me or of me, the only thing you are bringing up is this.
Yeah, it's a remarkable thing. And here's Mark Spears of The Undefeated on with Freddie and Fitzsimmons talking about the impact of Maya Moore's 2 year absence from the WNBA in her prime.
You can make an argument that she has the ability to be the greatest women's basketball player ever. So for her to give up two of her prime years of basketball too, in terms of her legacy, that takes some time off of what would have been some amazing years. So financially, it's always tricky when you talk about the WNBA, but man, put her in the Hall of Fame now. She was going to make it anyway, but let's bring her in early, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we've seen Renee Montgomery follow her lead. We talked to Cheryl Swoops, and she brought up Maya Moore, and she said, when we had her on with us, she basically said, we're not talking about this enough. This is a remarkable story. And I wonder what she's going to do next. Does she just, I mean, because you saw her reaction when they posted it when Irons was let out of jail on Instagram and Twitter, how emotional it was for her. You wonder if she's ever going to get that same sort of feeling from playing basketball again, or is this going to be her new calling?
Maya Moore's got bad. Like, I'll never forget when I as at Notre Dame, Father Ted Hesburgh is obviously the one of the central figures in Notre Dame lore. You've seen him involved. I mean, he has been an aide to presidents in the past. He was a part of the civil rights movement. And you get to, every once in a while, if you can schedule an appointment, go up and actually meet and talk to Father Ted when he was still with us. And getting to see his office and all of the awards and accolades and honors, they're literally like presidential medals stuffed in cabinets because he's got nowhere else to put them. That is Maya Moore's basketball career.
Yeah.
Like, she has got accolades and accomplishments and things that people never could have dreamed of.
I covered her when she won the NCAA championship as a member of the UConn Huskies.
So. I mean, but like, that could be like X thing down on the list because she's done everything. She's got basketball accomplishments. She's got all the resume, and she's dropped all that and said, no, I'm going to do this thing that I deem far more important. So like, we could put her in the Hall of Fame and we can talk about basketball stuff and she deserves all of it. But like, you're right. At this point, she has declared that there are things far more important on this. So whatever Maya Moore does next, we probably just need to follow her lead and listen to her a lot more on it and cover it a lot more, because she seems to have an arrow pointed due north in ways that are probably far higher than the rest of us. If she can look at all of the sports dreams that any of us could have ever wanted to accomplish. And now, granted, she got to already accomplish them and she got to do a lot of those things, but there was more left in the tank. Maya Moore is still a star in all the ways that you mentioned. And she just looked at it and said, yep, good.
I'm good.
There is something very wrong going on here that I believe I can help. And she did like the most base level human thing that we could possibly do. And most of us shirked the responsibility and said, no, I'm going to make sure the right thing gets done here. And I'm going to use all of this power that I have curated through sports, and I'm going to leverage it into this thing.
And whatever she does next, I'm sure she'll be successful at it as well. By the way, Maya Moore and Jonathan Irons will be on Good Morning America this morning with Robin Roberts. So kudos to her, and congratulations to Jonathan Irons for getting out of jail after being there for 22 years for a crime he did not commit. So we've got that coming for us. Coming up next on Canada Day, the country to our north is receiving a gift, or did receive a gift, they could not have imagined. And America says, you're welcome. We'll get to that after SportsCenter.
SportsCenter here on ESPN Radio. The NFL shortened its 2020 preseason to two games as part of a larger acclimatization plan for players in response to the coronavirus. Weeks 1 and 4 of the original preseason schedule are now canceled, with the first preseason game now set to take place between August 20th and 24th. The NFL and the NFLPA continue to discuss protocols for the reopening of team facilities, testing programs, and all other matters related to playing amid a pandemic. Here's our own Diana Rossini. Meanwhile, according to recent reports, the NHL has shifted its focus, selecting two Canadian hub cities as sites for the league resumption in July. Las Vegas had long been presumed as the favorite for a hub city when the NHL came back to action. However, the league decided to avoid selecting any U.S. cities after a spike of COVID positive cases in several states, including Nevada, in recent days. On this date in 2007, Roger Clemens records his 350th victory after allowing just one run on two hits over 8 innings versus the Twins. Yankees manager Joe Torre, the catcher for Warren Spahn's 350th win back in 1963, becomes a participant in the first two occasions a pitcher reached the milestone since 1928. That's SportsCenter, brought to you by Pennzoil. Crude oil's crude, natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas, not crude. Gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear testing using SAE 5W30.
All right, Golic and Wingo here with you. Glad you're with us. ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. So yesterday was Canada Day. By the way, one of the great pictures of all time on Twitter yesterday was a picture of PK Subban lying on his back in a pool with a maple leaf shirt on, basically saying Happy Canada Day. It was the coolest picture of the day. He's just like, you could try and be as cool as PK Subban, but you would fail. So Canada had himself a day yesterday, and Canada got the good news that it looks like, in all likelihood, both of the hub cities are going to be, as the NHL tries to resume play, going to be in our neighbors to the north, in Toronto and Edmonton, as our ESPN NHL hockey reporter Emily Kaplan reported. And for more on that, we're delighted to be joined by said NHL reporter, Emily Kaplan, host of the ESPN on Ice podcast. Emily, thanks for being with us. How certain are we that it is going to be these two cities specifically, Edmonton and Toronto?
We're pretty certain. Now, the caveat is that things have changed quite a bit to that point. Like a week ago, you could have said Vegas and Vancouver were absolute favorites. The NHL was booking blocks of rooms in Vancouver. And then all of a sudden, the Vancouver government was like, wait, we don't want the NHL here. That said, things are progressing pretty nicely between the NHLPA and the league as they are continuing negotiations. And I would expect an announcement sometime soon. The players are expected to vote on this on Friday or Saturday, and we should get an answer after that.
Any hope for Vancouver to just come out of nowhere and steal one of those spots? I'm the biggest Vancouver fan of all time, and I just want everybody to experience as much Vancouver as they possibly can.
Oh, trust me. If I had to spend 3 months of my life, I would very much love for it to be in Vancouver. But no, their health minister pretty much looked at the NHL's regulations and said, I disagree with the way you guys would deal with a positive test in quarantine. And we have a disagreement, and that's a non-starter for us.
And so, Emily, I'm curious then, what are the ways the NHL plans on handling those, and how is the Canadian government overall going to deal with this? As you just mentioned, there one particular region certainly balking at the idea.
Yeah, so it did go down to provincial governments. They did get some federal clearance that's going to help them with the quarantine rule. The biggest issue and the reason that we didn't think that we could go to Canada at all is because Canada has a 14-day immediate quarantine for anyone who crossed the borders, has to sit in a hotel room for 14 days and do absolutely nothing before they can do something. And the NHL is like, wait, we can't bring players to do that. Time's of the essence. So they did waive a little bit on that, but players will be tested daily. And really the issue with Vancouver was what was going to happen with some of the ancillary people who were, hotel workers or people at the arena, and what happens if they tested positive. And those were the particulars that Vancouver balked on.
Well, it's interesting because sort of we're seeing that in the NBA where the Toronto Raptors had to come here. They've been bubbling in Fort Myers before they go into the actual bubble. They're doing the double bubble in Florida, if we're going full bubblegum references here with what the Raptors are trying to get this done. So how tempted would the players have been? Because we've talked about this, Emily, with the idea, you know, Damian Lillard of the Portland Trailblazers in the NBA said, there's no way the guys are following all the rules, and this is in Orlando. Had this thing gone to Vegas, how tempted would the NHL players have been to sort of test to see how hard and fast the bubble actually was?
So I think this is twofold. You know, when I was talking to general managers and league, you know, personnel, they were more concerned about the Black Aces. Those are the guys they bring in that are on the fringe, don't get to play. They're minor leaguers that are just called up in expanded rosters. And they're like, we don't know if we necessarily trust them, but we do trust the players. As for the guys, you know, I was texting with a pretty prominent Western Conference player yesterday, and I was like, okay, you guys are going to Edmonton. That's not exactly Las Vegas. Do you think that's going to change some guys' opinions and make them want to opt out? And he quickly quashed that. He's like, I don't think anybody had the expectation that we were going to be walking around with the Cosmo playing cards. We understand we're going to be in a bubble. And the NHL is doing its best to make sure guys don't go stir crazy. At both Edmonton and Toronto, there is big plans for entertainment. I don't think it's as lavish as we're seeing in the NBA. And I did read that manual. It's more of, you know, outdoor movies, food trucks, controlled outings at golf courses, just making sure guys don't feel like they're going rink hotel, and nothing else.
The line of the morning, Edmonton is not quite Las Vegas. That's when that's going to stick with me for the rest of the morning.
Yeah, that might be on the sign going into
Welcome
Edmonton
to Edmonton.
Now.
We're not quite Las Vegas.
Exactly. And Emily, I guess in that vein, has that been the general attitude from most players that you've talked to on this? Because we've seen a variety of different interests in why guys may not be going back to the NBA bubble or why they're at least considering not leaving. What have been the general attitudes or concerns of most of the players as it comes to this return?
Mike, the thing that's really interesting about the NHL is that we don't quite know right now what the bubble's going to look like because they're still negotiating the phase 3 and phase 4 protocol. So majority of players have been kept in the dark. So a lot of guys don't know what it will look like and don't know whether they want to participate or not. Once we get those particulars, I do think we are going to find out, hey, there's some guys that say they're not interested. I do think the guys who say they're not interested, it's going to be because of health reasons or family reasons. Those are the two main things. The good news is the NHL and the NHLPA have come up with an agreement that if a guy decides he doesn't want to go, he actually doesn't even need to give a reason. He can just say, hey, I'm not interested. I'm going to opt out. And there will be absolutely no recourse. And there's no questions asked.
Emily Kaplan with us, our ESPN NHL reporter and ESPN on Ice podcast host. So we've talked about this a lot, Emily, with the NBA, because, you know, basically you had almost the completion of the entire regular season and then a hard pause for 3 months and then trying to resume it again in this bubble. And Junior pointed this out. It's like we had a season and we're going to translate that into this little tournament we're going forward. And I think in many ways, hockey and NBA are very comparable along those lines. You had built up over a long stretch of time in a regular season a rhythm, an understanding, a sort of a timing that you've perfected on where you're going to be when you're on the ice or on the court with your teammates. And now you've been away for this long. How hard is that timing and chemistry going to be able to replicate in the NHL with the added sort of, you know, outlier of a goaltender, which can change things dramatically in any playoff series?
It's extremely hard. And one of the other things that you have to consider is that hockey players for most of this quarantine hadn't had access to ice. The only guys for months who were able to actually get on the ice and skate were guys who went to Sweden, who are Swedish and went home, because Sweden didn't have any broad lockdown laws and all the rinks were open. But here in North America and other places of Europe, guys just couldn't do it. And there's nothing that replicates that motion of ice skating. A lot of guys brought rollerblades and were rollerblading around their neighborhoods. That's not quite the same. So it is going to be difficult at first for these guys to get back into game shape. They have been voluntary skating for the last couple weeks since June 8th. That will help. But these training camps are going to be fascinating. And I've been talking to a lot of coaches about what type of intensity level they want to bring, because it's 2 to 3 weeks to get these guys ready into playoff shape. And that is no time at all.
Emily, I'm curious. I just gotten back from some time off. And during the course of that, I saw that even for friends of mine that are NHL fans and people that live and breathe the sport, it seemed like the draft lottery kind of snuck up on a lot of people. So what was the biggest thing that actually came out of an event that even I saw hockey diehards didn't really have an idea that was going on when it did?
Mike, it was absolutely psycho. It was crazy. It was chaos. The fact is, the Detroit Red Wings suck. They had a terrible season, and they should have probably deserved the number one pick. They only got number four. The Ottawa Senators had two chances at the number one pick because of a trade they made with the San Jose Sharks a couple years ago. They only picked third and fifth. And instead, the number one pick of the draft, which will be Alexei Lafreniere, is going to go to Team E. And that's a team that's actually playing in this 24-team tournament. It's going to be one of these 16 play-in teams. And whoever loses their first round gets a 12.5% chance at him. So consider a team that technically made the NHL postseason will get the number one pick. So that definitely got a lot of people riled up.
And Emily, listen, knowing how this show goes and knowing who I work with, I have to ask this question. It says on your Twitter bio you are a bagel snob?
It's true.
Explain. I have so many questions.
It's okay. I have some answers. I grew up in New Jersey where the bagels are just good. You can just find good bagels. And for the last 4 years, I've been living in Chicago and highly disappointed with what I see. So all of my friends try to get me to eat bagels here. They say this place is good, that place is good. It's just not good. So, yeah, I sneak in bagels over the border. Usually when I can get on a plane, I've got a full suitcase of bagels.
Well, I can safely say that everyone on this show probably endorses that strongly. Right, Junior?
I had a teammate from New Jersey whose dad, every time he would visit on the weekend, used to bring us bagels from New Jersey. I think it's the water. I think that's the difference in a lot of these things when it comes to that. So
I think everyone has always said that when it comes to New Jersey. It's the water.
Absolutely.
And Edmonton, too. The water in Edmonton, too. I hear
okay. All right. So that's why we're going there. The water for the bagels and the food trucks.
It's a beautiful thing. You can check out the ESPN on Ice podcast hosted by our own Emily Kaplan. Emily, thanks for the time today.
Thanks, Emily.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks.
That was good.
Yeah, it is the water.
By the way, can I just say one thing? Food trucks? In a pandemic, we all concerned about open air cooking in a food truck and...
I mean, probably. I think it's all a concern.
A little concerned about that when she brought that up. I love food trucks. Don't get me wrong. A little concerned in the current environment. Maybe it's better in Canada right now. Probably. Don't you think?
Maybe. I was just going to stare at you and see how long you'd keep
going. I was about to say you were giving me no response, and it was a little uncomfortable.
Good.
Thank you.
Good.
Coming up next, why Giannis is looking to join very rarefied air when the season resumes. In the bubble or the mesh hat. Thanks, Taylor Twellman. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.
All right, guys, book it. You know the drill. You add book it to any of your hot take. It's a hot take multiplier. It allows you to feel like Stephen A. Smith, if only for a moment.
You can book it.
Put it in the books.
You know what time it is. It's book it time, damn it.
Let's go.
Let's get this thing cracking.
Let's go.
Golic and Wingo here is presented by Progressive Insurance. Protecting your small business is a big deal. Cover what you've worked so hard for. Visit ProgressiveCommercial.com.
Your feet are huge.
I do. I have big feet.
Like, I'm 11 and a half, and I look like I have, like, tiniest feet. How big are your shoes?
They're 14s, and I got to tell you.
Sweet Lord.
It's one of those things.
You're like, a capital L.
Well, you know what, Trey? Like, you mentioned it there, and it sounds cool when you're a kid growing up. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, I got this big shoe size, because everyone's like, you know what that means, and then you get to make the big socks joke, and everybody laughs in the seventh grade. Ha, ha, ha. But in actuality, it sizes you out of a lot of shoes I would like to get, and they don't carry 14s in stores hardly ever, so I've been relegated to online shopping for a long time, and it's part of why I have this current shoe addiction.
Relegated, meaning the shoe closet that has, 500 pairs of sneakers in it?
Listen, let's not go into that right now. Anyway, it's time to play Book It here on Golic and Wingo. I give you the take. If you want to spice it up, throw a little razzle-dazzle on that thing, you shout Book It. We play the sounder, cool stuff happens.
Put it in the books!
Everybody gets excited, and if you don't, you won't, and we'll move right on. You ready, Hal?
Sure.
All right. NFL stadiums will hit the over of their allowed capacity with this waiver system. You going to book it?
Okay, just so people understand, The Athletic came out with a story that if NFL is going to have fans in the stands, they're looking into having them sign some sort of COVID waiver, which says, hey, man, I may get it, but it's not the NFL's fault because I'm signing up for it. We've all signed a bunch of waivers in our lives when we do ridiculous things. Like rappelling down a building, I had to sign a waiver. Snowmobiling, you have to sign a waiver. I've always wondered what it can actually mean and how much legal standing it has. So I'm not going to book this for a couple of reasons.
No, sir. No.
I'm not sure, despite the NFL's desires to have fans in the stands, I'm not sure that's going to happen in any way, shape, or form. So I don't see any way they're going to hit the capacity with or without the waiver, so I'm not going to book it.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about potentially X-ing out like we already are canceling two preseason games, and as you've pointed out, there's a chance we could play no preseason games.
Book that.
You're going to do all of that dumb bleepery, but then you're going to allow fans in the stands?
Yeah. No.
In what world? What sort of Justin-loving God? I'm not going to book that one. Trey, Zion Williamson deserves to be on the cover of NBA 2K. You going to book it?
Deserves is an interesting word, right?
It's kind of a made-up word. By the way, yeah. Noting this is the next-gen version of the game, so I think there are multiple covers on this one. Dame Lillard is the main cover on this, but Zion the next-gen cover.
Yeah, if you want to listen, it's not about who's best. It's about what's going to sell the most copies of the games. So, yeah, Zion Williamson would do that for them. So, yeah, I'm going to book it.
Yeah, I could say I could argue putting him on the cover of the main game over Dame. Like,
correct.
It's Zion bleeping Williamson. You saw what he just warped college basketball into for a year. It was insane. It was bat bleep crazy. And so, yeah, it's about moving product. This guy looks like, even in the short stint we've seen him, we know that the injury was part of the beginning of the season, that he is still going to be something pretty special. He's averaging 23.6 on 59% shooting. He's on pace to join Shaq as the only rookies to average 20 points on 55 shooting in a season. Part of that is certainly the nature of his game. But in a limited time, coming off of injury, he's shown a pretty strong trajectory. I have zero issue with this. More is better. More Zion is going to remain better.
Totally agree.
It is Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo.
Yo.
Trey, Giannis will win MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. You're going to book it.
Now, Zach Lowe said this on the Low Post podcast. Michael Jordan, Hakeem Olajuwon, David Robinson, Kevin Garnett are the only Defensive Player of the Years to have won the NBA Most Valuable Player Award during their careers. Jordan and Olajuwon are the only ones who won both awards in the same season. So that's the rarefied air we're talking about if Giannis wins the MVP and Defensive Player of the Year in the same year. I think we both agree that the end of the season and the way it's going to be wasn't enough for LeBron to overtake Giannis for the MVP. So I think he's going to win that. I think he's probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year. So yeah, I'm going to book it.
I'm not going
to book it.
Just to be different because I feel like it, but interesting note from our researcher, Joss. Real plus minus is a stat that now goes back to 96-97 at the beginning of NBA play-by-play. This season, Giannis's real plus minus, 9.79, is the third highest in a season since that time. Only Steph Curry in his back-to-back MVP seasons had a higher real plus minus. For an idea, Giannis, when he won the MVP, had a 5.82 real plus minus, so almost 4 points higher in this situation in a season where he looks like he is very likely to repeat on that one. And no, ultimately, he's still only going to be judged if he carries the asterisk ring coming off of this postseason.
Correct.
Understandably so. Trey, this is an interesting one. Jordan Love will play more snaps at a position other than quarterback in 2020. You going to book it?
Now listen, Brett Favre said this on TMZ, I think it was. They should use him like Taysom Hill, the way the Saints use their quarterback Taysom Hill in New Orleans, moving him all over the field. First of all, Jordan Love's not going to be on any special teams like Taysom Hill is. So we can throw that out.
Yes.
That's out of the way. What I actually think is a more apt comparison for Jordan Love would be Cordell Stewart. Because I think that's sort of a better model for him in terms of what his athletic ability is. I think this is assuming Aaron Rodgers' health, right? Which has been a problem the last couple of years before that. Aaron Rodgers has missed some time, significant time, with injuries. So I'm going to give Aaron Rodgers health. I'm giving him health for the purposes of this book and discussion. So in that scenario, yes, I believe Jordan Love will play more snaps at a position other than quarterback in 2020. I think they'll find a way to utilize him on the field.
Book it.
I'm going to not book this because my counter is why?
Why not?
Like, he doesn't offer you anything at those other positions that's going to be a decided advantage. Like, Taysom Hill can catch the ball well out of the backfield.
How do you know that?
Because if he could have done it, he probably would have done it at another level that would have been noticed. We dig these things up if you were, like, do you have some stat? Was he a great high school tight end, or did he do something awesome there? Like, does he have that in his background?
He does. And you know, Cordell Stewart didn't have a lot of that stuff when he was at Colorado either. They just found a way with an incredible skill set, and they thought they had a good quarterback to begin with. They wanted to get the guy on the field. And, you know, the Packers took a lot of heat for not giving Aaron Rodgers a lot of weapons instead of drafting his replacement. I think they can find a way to utilize him that would make it very interesting.
The notion of him being something resembling a weapon for Aaron Rodgers is laughable to me. For a guy that never averaged more than 2.5 yards a carry while he was in college at Utah State, where you can assume, and especially in the 2019 season, he is their only real source of offense after losing a lot of his receivers in that year. And there still wasn't. Now, you can blame some of that on coaching if you want to, but usually in college what we see is if you've got the ability to do more, that's at a level they generally tend to let you do so. So I am not going to book this one. We got time for this one. This would be interesting.
We got time for a couple if we fly.
Cam Newton will be the Patriots week one starter. You going to book it?
Yes. They won't announce it till the day or the hour before the actual kickoff, but yes, he will be the week one starter.
Yeah, I'm going to book this one.
Nothing
too,
against like, Jared Stidham, but they made this move for a reason.
It's great, and I can you hear can all the book it. You know, the Patriots really like Jared Stidham. That's fine. You can like him all you want. You just brought a better quarterback in, so he's probably going to be playing some football for you, whether he dabs or not. Trey, here's the important one here.
That's why we had to get this one in.
Joey Chestnut going to win the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. You're going to book it.
Well, here's the deal, right? Like, who's the competition for him? That's what I want to know.
So
Mickey Sudo?
No, that's
a woman's champion.
So she's going to be on the women's side. Yeah. Matt Stoney beat Joey in 2015. He's in the field, third-ranked eater in the world. Jeff Esper is the number two-ranked eater in the world. Actually beat Joey for the title in the Hooters Wing Eating Contest. 281 Hooters wings, a new world
record. We ain't doing wings on the 4th of July.
But I heard Crazy Legs Conti, famous major league eater, say this on a podcast the other day. You do not bet against Joey Chestnut when it comes to hot dogs and the 4th of July.
Yeah.
So I am going to book this one, sign, seal, and deliver this one.
Book.
I don't know if I can officially make a prediction because I am the play-by-play announcer for this event, and so I hope we just have a great event. But at the same time, it is hard to go against Joey Chestnut in this realm. I will
feel
say
like
that.
The authenticity of the hot dog eating contest has not been compromised by you making a book at prediction.
I appreciate that.
I want to be clear on that. Coming up, what's it like to be in the bubble before the bubble? We'll double bubble as the champions getting set to defend their crown. Stay with us.